Hello? Hello? Everyone can hear me? All right. Welcome to my session. I hope you had a great week here at TechEd. I had a couple of difficulties. You may have recognized it. I have two machines here, and I need to connect via the VPN to the machines I would like to show the demo, and both didn't work. So think about the likelihood that these two machines are not working. And now, just a minute ago, it started to work. So I hope you will be able to enjoy with me the demos. My name is Artin Avenes. I'm a program manager at Microsoft, specifically in the SQL Server team. And I'm working in the Parallel Data Warehousing team, which is a sister team of the SQL Server team. How many of you have heard about Parallel Data Warehouse? SQL Server Parallel Data Warehouse. All right. It was very funny. Yesterday, one of the users came to me and said, "Oh, I never have heard that Microsoft is shipping something like a parallel database management system," right? And I think one of the lessons which I will tell our leadership team is here that we should be more aggressive in entertaining and highlighting our products. And I will today talk a little bit about PDW, but particularly focusing and zooming in into one specific feature which is known as Polybase. And it's also, again, funny because Polybase was actually the code name for the project. And we were used within Microsoft or within the SQL Server team to use always this word so that when marketing came and said, "OK, we want to change the name," we said, "No, wait a moment. This name is actually really suitable and applicable for what we are doing." So actually, it is now a feature which is now the feature name of our Hadoop SQL integration story. And it got shipped just a month ago, or 1.5 months ago, with SQL Server 2012 PDW, which is also known as the version 2 of the SQL Server Parallel Data Warehouse product. The agenda for today's talk is divided into several sections. And I will start first with providing a quick overview about, for those of you who don't know about PDW, on a high level, what actually PDW is. I will then explain why we are investing into big data integration and why we are continuing investing. So this is, and you will see, I will refer to that later in the session, and always about the V1 version of Polybase. So we are already working on the next version of Polybase, which will come out soon. And then after that, I will dive into the technical building blocks of Polybase, starting with what is known as external tables, a new T-SQL construct which we have introduced, which is actually not available in the SQL Server SMP product. And then I will talk about our query capabilities or how we extended our query engine to be able to run queries, T-SQL queries against non-relational data stored in HDFS, in a Hadoop distributed file system. And we'll then continue with two additional Polybase scenarios, which is the parallel import for persistent storage, so parallel importing of data which resides in HDFS into a relational store like PDW, and the other way around, exporting the data out into HDFS as well. And finally, I will conclude with the prerequisites and the configuration settings one needs to follow to enable Polybase functionality. And at the end, I will summarize this session and give a brief overview or outlook about the next version of Polybase. So let's start with PDW. What is PDW? PDW is nothing else than a classic shared nothing parallel database management system. And why we are going to offer a parallel database management system? The answer is very simple. What you have heard maybe in other sessions is that data volumes are exploding. More and more data is getting gathered. And one single DBMS instance will not be able to handle this large amount of data. So independent of how good your query optimizer is or query processing is, whether you use SQL Server single instance or any other product from our competitors, the data volume is so large that people would like to scale as the data is growing. So a parallel data warehouse solution as PDW, we are offering you a scalable solution. So think about not one single SQL Server instance, but we are offering multiple SQL Server instances. And I will explain later what this means actually for the query processing. Right? We are built on standards, and with standards, I mean we are using SQL Server 2012 underneath. So if you think about SQL Server Parallel Data Warehouse, please keep in mind it is SQL Server 2012. We are using Windows Server 2012. That's the standards, our own stack we are exercising. So nothing exotic. Or you can say it's exotic because it is Windows Server and it is SQL Server. And last but not least, why we are calling it appliance. The idea of an appliance is that we are bringing the entire solution, the entire stack, software and hardware, to your data center, pre-configured and installed, pre-installed with everything you need. You just need to press the button. In reality, of course, there are unique requirements in data centers which need to be obeyed, and we need to do the configuration at the data center, but this is all taken care of by our folks. So this is what is mentioned here as prepackaged. So now you have a parallel database management system. So as I pointed out, think about you have multiple SQL Server instances. How does a query processing will look like? So we are distinguishing between control and compute nodes. Again, compute and control nodes are nothing else than SQL Server instances. The control node is the external interface. So if you are issuing, if you're starting to issue, to run or to execute a query against the Parallel Data Warehouse appliance, you are, at the first, the control node will receive this query. And the idea behind a parallel solution like PDW is that you're distributing the data, right? As I mentioned, one single instance cannot handle large volume of data. We're talking here about terabyte of data. So one important prerequisite here is that you are distributing the data across the compute nodes, which maintain, which store the actual user data, while the control node is basically the head, knows where the data resides, and only stores the metadata of the actual user data. Here I'm pointing out a distributed table in a very simple example, table A, where chunks of that table, rows, are equally distributed across the compute nodes. Now you may wonder, how can I achieve that equal distribution? PDW allows you to create a table. There's actually a syntax that says create table with type equals distribution, and where you can then provide what we call distribution column. A column which you know about that has unique values, so that you can equally, so that the system underneath will use this distribution column to equally distribute the data across the compute nodes. So the only thing you have to know as a designer is to know what is the appropriate distribution column. But the distribution actually itself will be completely transparent for you. You just execute the create external, the create table, I'm coming later to external tables, the create table, with the distribution column, and we will take care of the distribution. So how does now the query processing works? So now you have laid out the data in a distributed fashion, a query comes in, what is the natural way to process now the distributed table, the different chunks on the compute nodes? It is that you are now processing in fully parallelized fashion. Right? So a select here again, to continue this simple example, select from table A, which is distributed. We are building what we call a distributed SQL plan, distributed SQL. And that contains the actual SQL operation that each of the compute nodes here has to execute. In this simple example, it is simple select from, and now the smaller partitions you have here. And this is done in a completely parallelized fashion. Right? So each of the compute nodes are executing the same plan. And of course, what now needs also to be taken place is that once you have executed the query in a fully parallelized way, you need to move the results back to the client process. That's why we don't have only a distributed query optimizer in place, but also a component that is called DMS, short for Data Movement Service. So once you have processed the query on each of the compute nodes, you are bringing back then the results to the control node, which returns the results back to the client process. The DMS component, but is not only important and relevant and critical for moving the results back, but think about a more complex query, a join, where you're joining a table A with a table B, right? And here, what we're calling join-incompatible queries, my apologies, it could happen that you need to move the data around to satisfy the query. So also here, the data movement service will kick in based on the query plan which our query optimizer will generate. So this is, in a nutshell, how a parallel query processing in PDW works. You have the data distributed, and the query processing is taking place in a fully parallelized way, where potentially the DMS, the data movement service, will kick in to move data around to satisfy the query. Now, a cost-optimal plan in such a world means minimizing data movements, right? Data movements, even if we have high-speed networking between the compute nodes, we have InfiniBand, data movement is the most costly operation and not the actual execution on the compute nodes. So our query optimizer is always, or aims always to offer a plan which minimizes the cost or the data movement. So this was PDW, and I'm coming back to this slide pretty often during the session to explain you how actually the query processing works now with external sources such as Hadoop or HDFS. So now, why we are investing into big data? Why we are thinking this is something which makes sense? I don't know how many of you have attended other sessions regarding big data before? All right, so you have heard maybe always these kind of statements, you want to derive smarter decisions, right? As I mentioned before, the data volume is exploding. This is particular because there are new applications there. I think there were examples in previous sessions about sensor devices. Sensor devices which you can put in your car, which can measure data like your speed, and this information gets then delivered to the car insurance, for example, which can then understand your behavior, can understand better about their customers, and can maybe change or adapt their policies. This is one example. But there are also kind of other examples like social networking applications or examples, mobile devices which are tracking your location and so forth. So in general, and I will not dive into too much into why it is actually good to integrate with new big data environments like Hadoop. In general, lots of data is generated in non-relational form in the first place, right? This is usually semi-structured or unstructured data. Typically, even unstructured data has some kind of schema or some kind of structure, but it is not in this traditional relational form. And that's why platforms like Hadoop became very popular, because platforms like Hadoop address the weaknesses of a relational database system, where you don't need to put it actually in a schema, where you don't have a very expensive ETL process. There's an entire industry around ETL, extraction, transformation, and then loading into the actual relational store. So that's why Hadoop actually became so relevant, because they said, okay, my data as it is born, I can dump into a platform. It is cheap, it can scale, it is distributed through its file system, file system. It distributes the data similar to what we did with parallel data warehouse with the slide I showed before. So that's why Hadoop became so popular. And on the other side, it provides you a programming framework like MapReduce, where you only have to define a function, map and a reduce function, known from the functional programming, and the framework will take care about the distribution, about the distributed computation underneath. So that was actually a success of why people started to look into Hadoop. Now what we see is actually kind of also ironic and funny at the same time. When I was a young grad student, I was following the Hadoop community very closely. And if you wanted to publish a paper somewhere, you just mentioned the word Hadoop in your paper, you wrote something about Hadoop, and it was accepted, particularly if it came to MapReduce. Now, talking with customers as a program manager, I recognize that many come back and say, yes, Hadoop is a great idea to have it, to use it to store this non-relational data. But at the end of the day, I would like to analyze the data that comes back to making smarter decisions. I want to include this data to do a complex analysis. And to do complex analytics, you have to combine data. And now we are struggling. They are telling me. We are struggling because we always need to stick with the MapReduce framework. Or we are struggling because now there's a SQL dialect, which is called Hive or HiveQL, which is not performing whatsoever. So what we see now is that customers come back and say, so A, we have a skill gap. We need all these armada of MapReduce folks. We need people who understand Java. But we are used to use SQL. I'm not even saying T-SQL. I'm saying they're using SQL. We are used to use our BI tools. How does it work with Hadoop? Right? And what about actually high availability aspects? Right? I mean, yes, there's replication in Hadoop, but going beyond that. Right? So that's why I'm spending a little bit more time on this slide is that's why we believe that these two systems will rather coexist side by side rather than the one will replace the other. And with this important assumption, the idea was now, or the question was, how can we overcome this impedance mismatch on the modeling side, where you have on the one side unstructured, semi-structured data stored in a different platform and relational DBMS, where you keep your structured data you want, but to combine both and to derive insights out of the data. And that's where Polybase was born. And I hope now you understand also why it was named Polybase. Right? And it was born by David DeWitt and Rima, who are members of the Jim Gray System Lab, a research lab who is tightly working together with product engineering team. And naturally, they are working, if you know the biography of David DeWitt, he's a well-known database professor in the past in Wisconsin, they are tightly working with the SQL Server team. And in this particular case, they were working with us. And now we were thinking about what are the general design goals. If I have to explain you why is Polybase better than other Hadoop SQL integration stories, I would start with these simple high-level goals. The number one goal is, or one of the important goals, is simplicity. As I mentioned, we hear from many customers coming back saying, we have all these zoo of products, particularly if you think about Hadoop, they come up always with these funny names, Hive, Pig, Flume, I don't know, you name it. And we want to really use our own tools, which we're using for years. We understand that Hadoop is a new platform that can help us to store this new type of data, which is generated by this new type of applications. But we would like to use the existing tools. Simplicity. Second, performance. You still want to have the results, or you don't want to wait on the results. So plugging it in, incorporating into our cost-based query optimizer, and achieving a query processing which is fully parallelized, that's the second important goal. Third, and I'm actually very proud of this goal, which means openness, means here, we are not a closed system. Our Polybase is not focusing only on one Hadoop distribution. If you see our competitors, they always say, oh, open source, we are good, Microsoft is bad, right? But if you then look what they're providing as a service, they are very close on their system. Polybase you can use against multiple Hadoop distributions. We are completely agnostic against the operating system underneath. So you can have connectivity to have Hortonworks data platform on Windows Server. You can have it on Hortonworks data platform on Linux, as well as we support and we certified Polybase features and functionality against Cloudera's Linux distribution 4.0. Are these Hadoop distributions known for you guys? Yeah, okay. These are basically the two biggest or largest distributors. Just give me a second. I'll finish that, and then I will come back to you. And the fourth point, and I can't stress this enough, is the integration with Microsoft Office and the BI stack. I don't know how many of you have seen these great, very fancy examples of Power Pivot, Power View, Geoflow, Data Explorer. Right? This is actually the beauty of Polybase, that we can actually, and this is, of course, kind of a closed system. Right? Only we can provide that value proposition. So you can use Excel, you can use all these add-ins, Power View, Power Pivot, to actually query through Polybase. That's the last aspect. There was a question.
One of us is coming up with like a version 2.
Mm-hmm.
So do you need to do any updates or like mm-hmm.
So HortonWorks comes with the version 2. The question is there any updates, patching required to support that? This is a very good question. So if you see Cloudera's CHT4 is based on Hadoop 2.0, right? And what we are doing here also is abstracting this away from the user. And that comes back basically to the question, to generalize your question even more, how do we do upgrades, updates with the appliance? And that brings it even further back to the appliance model, where we say that the upgrade process is handled by us. You can, of course, initiate it, invoke it, but this will be completely transparent for you. And in future, since HTTP came out now after we released, so with the newer update versions of the appliance, I cannot say now which update version it will be, but we will basically update and upgrade also here. The customer is completely transparent. And you will see, I'm coming back at the end of the session about how or what you have to do software-wise to enable Polybase functionality. And then I will come back to your question so you can see how this will be then done. So this was a quick introduction about PDW and why we're investing in Polybase. What are the high-level design goals? Now, I would like to dive into the technical building blocks. And core of the Polybase functionality is what we refer to as external tables. So following the idea or the goal of simplicity, we wanted to introduce something that a user can create very easy to refer to data which reside outside of the appliance. And that's where the idea of the external table came into the picture. So an external table, and you see here an example, is nothing else than what you would see as a regular relational table, only that we have here the word or the keyword external explicitly called out, because there will be some differences. And this external table has two attributes, one mandatory, which is the location attribute, and the other one is the format options, right, which are optional. I will explain in a bit what this means. So the location is actually the attribute that that a user has to specify to indicate the location of their Hadoop cluster. And actually, it's an IP plus port plus the file path, which can be point to a file in HDFS or a folder. I will show you in a bit an example. And format options are options you can optionally specify if you are thinking about text files. And if you think about delimited text files, what are the delimiters, how to handle rejects, I will also explain that in a bit. But this is a new concept which is not shipped in SQL Server, which is not available in SQL Server, which is only available in PDW. And the idea of an external table, as the name says, is that it opens up the door for data which resides outside. And the beauty of this general approach is that in future, we may not only refer to HDFS or data stored in the Hadoop distributed file system, but wherever else. Right? Maybe in 1 year, there's another attractive platform coming up. I don't know which name. Right? But we will potentially have also here the ability to reuse this concept, which is general. I'm not talking about HDFS table. I'm saying external table. And just some further information about the security, very important also from our customers we hear. We would like to have the SQL Server security model for also for Hadoop. Right? And what we require here is not only the alter schema permission, which one has to have if a user wants to create a table, but also the what is called the administer bulk operations. So this is a more restrictive, or we are not allowing everyone to create an external table, because again, think about mentally what happens if you create an external table. You open up the door for data which comes outside. That's why we are putting the restrictions on the create external table statement itself. I don't know what is so funny here, but all right. So the difference now to a regular SQL table is that we do not support DML operations. So you can't delete, manipulate, or update data in HDFS. We think about next versions to open up that. But the mental model here is, again, that we don't have control of the data which resides outside of our appliance. There can be MapReduce jobs, there can be HiveQL queries, there can be whatever else the Hadoop stack is offering, can interact and interfere and change the data. Right? So that's why we're saying we're not offering any guarantees, and that's why we also said in the first version we are not going to support DML operations, because we see rather the select operations as the primary use case. But again, it will change maybe over time, and we are considering that, and we'll come back to that as well. So the field the format options, sorry, as I mentioned, are a set of attributes. I'm not going through all. If you think about delimited text files, and in this first version, and it's maybe important to note here, is we are supporting delimited text files only in the first version of Polybase. There are different file formats in HDFS for folks who know about Hadoop and HDFS a little bit more. There are different file formats like RC files, sequence files, and certainly, as I indicated, we are working already on the next version, which will be available soon, and where we will open it up. But for delimited text files, there are options or attributes like field terminator important. Do you want to have a pipe? Do you want to use a comma or whatever else? Then reject values. As I mentioned, with create external table, you're putting a relational view on top of data which resides in the Hadoop. And this view is manifest by the columns which you are specifying. So the columns have data types, and if the rows are coming into the appliance, we are checking whether the schema definition is honored, and if it's not, we are rejecting those. So that's why the reject values are there. One can specify to say, okay, if more than 1,000 rejected rows are there during my query, I will reject and fail the query. And you can also specify how missing entries in your files are treated. So whether they will always be translated into null, or depending on your data type, for example, integer, they will be then translated into zero. That's also what you can define here. So this was external tables from a language surface point of view. So now the question is, how does it work underneath, right? You're creating external table. What happens actually underneath? Right? Could someone answer me this question? Or guesses what happens? All right. So what we introduced was is called HDFS bridge. Right? HDFS stands for Hadoop Distributed File System. And I mentioned before the data movement service, right? The data movement service that is responsible in charge of moving the data within the appliance. What is more natural than to extend this movement service to be able now to suck in data from outside of the appliance? So that's why we are calling it an HDFS process, which is running within the DMS component. So underneath of our query engine, again, we are leveraging the DMS process. Within the DMS process, we have something that is called the HDFS bridge process, which will then, and that happens if you're running a create external table, that will ping the Hadoop name node. So Hadoop is also divided into what is called the name node and data nodes. Think about PDW, control node, compute nodes, all SQL Server, right? And Hadoop has the same concept, where the name node maintains and stores only the metadata. They know where the different chunks of a file exist on the data nodes, because they also distribute the data across the data nodes. So what actually happens is, if you run a create external table command, underneath, there are two things that happen. A, we are pinging the name node to what we call file binding, or a less complex word is, we are checking whether the file or the folder actually exists. As I mentioned, processes may kick in between, may delete the folder of the file on the Hadoop side. The user can delete the file, folder, whatever. So when someone is creating an external table referring via the location attribute to a file or folder, we will check whether this actually exists. And what we also do is, we are gathering some basic information about the file and the folder, or the folder. You can either refer to a file or folder. So important, for example, is the file size itself. Think about a file which is 800 gigabyte of size. And you have 10 PDW compute nodes. What you would like to achieve later on is that all the PDW compute nodes, if they are accessing the data, which is, again, distributed, are all active and involved, and all are involved at with the same amount of work. So you want to achieve a balanced importing of the data. Right? So that's why we need to know the size of the file, which we can retrieve from the name node, which we then do our math in the background based on your topology, PDW topology. If you have 10 compute nodes, what would be one possible distribution? Would be that 800 divided to 10, right? 80 gigabytes each of the compute nodes will be assigned to. Right? And you need to know the offset so that everyone reads from the appropriate position of the file, but that's what is referred to as split generation. So at the end, we have a map of file splits, which we store together with the external table object, as well as we store together with the external table object the format options. So in summary, what happens if you run a create external table command? Coming back to this one picture, which I showed you in the beginning. What happens is only on the control node side. That's what you should take from this section. So what we do is we are pinging the name node, we are verifying the existing of the folder or file, we're gathering minimal statistic information, as we call it, to do the file splits afterwards, and we're storing it together with this information on the SQL Server instance on the control node. No actual physical tables will be created on the compute nodes. That's a major difference to if you run a regular create table command in PDW, where you will certainly create tables on the compute nodes which contain the actual user data. But here, this is just a reference to outside of the world. That's why we are keeping it as a reference and only the metadata are stored. So let's see if I can show you a quick... All right. So what you see here, What you see here is, let's make it a little bit better. What you see here is SSDT, a standard data tool, which you can use to issue T-SQL queries. I have created here HadoopDB. It's a regular database, and let's hope that the connection is working. Yeah, it's working. And you see here an example of creating... Sorry, the computer is a little bit new here for me. You see here how to create actually an external table, right? You see here the columns, like regular tables, and you see here the location. And location is pointing... I hope you can see it at all. The location, which is pointing to the name node of Hadoop usually runs on the port 8020, And this is actually a HortonWorks cluster, which is running. And this is actually a file path. This is a text file, a text file which resides in Hadoop. And now I have created an external table. Let's hope that we can see this also showing up here on the left side. Yes. And that's we have actually introduced in SSDT the separation of normal tables and external tables, so you can always see, okay, that's external tables, and that's exactly the table which I just created. You can drop external tables, which I will not do it because I will use this example then further later on. But you can look up whether these external tables are really created. You can see that here by just running select star from sys-tables. There's no other table than the external table. So again, the idea is, again, very simple. Right? You are creating an external table that points to a folder or file, and you will have the reference created very easily. I will come back to this. All right. So this was how to create, actually, an external table, and what happens underneath by the HDFS bridge. Now, how does the querying works, right? Once you have created an external table? This is another example. You just saw it. So now three important scenarios are possible. Number one is that you are running simple T-SQL commands against this external table. Right? Here in this example, clickstream is an external table as I created, and you are running a simple select statement that wants to retrieve the top 10 URLs from that table with a predicate. The second example is, now imagine you have multiple files, many files in Hadoop, and you want to combine this. You want to combine the different files to derive insights out of your data. And here in this example, please imagine that the URL underscore description is yet another external table. That means it's yet another file or folder in Hadoop. And you can combine these different files stored in HDFS with each other and get the results back through Polybase. These are Hadoop-only scenarios via T-SQL. Right? There's no relational data involved whatsoever. But this is the third scenario, and that's where the beauty comes together, where you can combine relational and non-relational data with each other to derive insights. Here in this example, user is a PDW table. Right? Let's assume it's a distributed table. So these three scenarios are now possible. What happens underneath? Underneath, in four simple statements. First, we are using again the HDFS bridge to get the data into PDW now. So the HDFS bridge in the external table command was only for verifying the existence and doing the calculation for the files, file splits, right? There was no data coming into the PDW whatsoever. Now if you run select, certainly you want to get the results, right? At this moment now, the data is coming into PDW through Polybase, through the HDFS readers, and we are spinning up multiple HDFS readers. So it's a fully parallelized process. Each compute node actually is spinning up eight HDFS reader processes. And they're reading all from different offsets, sucking in the data, returning it back. So how does it really work? Right? So the query engine needs to know, oh, this is now data which has to come from the outside, from the appliance. How does the query optimizer will recognize this? Through the external table syntax or concept, right? Because we introduce an external table. So the query optimizer, when he sees a select from external table, will recognize this is, we are referring here to data which resides outside of the appliance. That's why after the query is generated, we will have something like we call it the external data movement. That's exactly the movement which I described, which is getting the data out from the appliance, out from Hadoop and HDFS into the appliance. And there are three different flavors of an external data move, which is external shuffle operation, which you can see here behind me, external round robin, and external broadcast. What does it mean? So now think about you getting the data from Hadoop into the appliance. Now think about you have 10 nodes. How does it work? Right? You get now 800 gigabytes of data into how do you distribute the data? Right? I said in the one example, we would like to achieve a balanced distribution so that each of the compute node has the same amount of work. And that's what you see under external round robin move. Right? We are distributing the same amount of files in a round robin fashion on all the compute nodes so that we can ensure that the work is equally distributed. But there are cases when you combine relational with non-relational data where you have a little bit more knowledge, because with the relational data, you know how it is laid out. And now assume you're doing a join on a column, which is the distribution column. Right? So in that way, you're using this information to distribute the data accordingly so that you actually don't need any more a shuffle operation. Right? This is the external shuffle move. And in case of a replicated table, you have broadcast move. Replicated tables are tables, you can also define it in PDW, where you store an entire copy in PDW compute nodes. And in that way, you have or the external broadcast move will ensure that all the data lands on all the compute nodes. So what means actually external move here? And I'm going here really deep into the external data movement itself. Right? Now, think about following to better understand. The query optimizer sees an external table. It says, okay, I have to inject in the query plan external move. And the query optimizer will figure out, is this an external shuffle move, round robin, or broadcast, right? And now you have the external move. How does the external move is actually executed? And that's where we see here three important steps which happens really underneath. That is where we use the HDFS client API. This is basically where the Java portion comes into the game. Where we use the HDFS client API to read the data really from the data nodes in Hadoop. Then we have what we call reader worker threads that are doing the conversions on the data types so that the data types are coming in a correct form so that we can understand those. And we will convert them so that we can actually execute on them. So that's what an external move internally look like. So to summarize, again, coming back to this one slide. Now we have the external table object, as I said. Now a select query comes in, which refers to an external move. Now the query optimizer is creating a query optimizer, query plan, with an external DMS move. This gets injected into all the compute nodes. On each of the compute nodes, an HDFS readers are invoked, which read then via the HDFS client API the data out in a fully parallelized fashion. All right. So let's see. Again, we have now the table created. And this is a simple example. I'm keeping my examples very simple. So I apologize if you expect now the fancy BI. I will later on show you a little bit about Power Pivot. But this is really simple to just understand the fundamentals of the query. So here's a select running, a select star from bands. And bands is the external table which I created before, which refers to this one delimited text file, bands.tbl, right, at the top of the screen. Right? This is a file which resides in Hadoop. And with simple select, you can retrieve the information or the data. Now let's look how the query plan will look like. Can someone tell me what you will see here as an external move? No one? All right, it's a little bit. So what you can see here is an XML presentation. I know it's very ugly, so please forgive me. This is the one area in our product which we need to improve. But this is the query plan. And what you can see here is, and this is what I wanted to show you, is basically the external round robin move. Right? Because you're doing a select star from bands. Right? There's no relational table involved. So the query optimizer says, okay, I don't know the distribution of this table. So what I'm doing is I'm doing a round robin move, distributing the work across all the compute nodes. And that's basically what you see here.
All right. Maybe another example. Let's create another external table. This other external table is referring to another file
in HDFS. That's the name flyers, right? We had bands and flyers, right? This is another file in HDFS.
And now you will hopefully see on the left side, if I refresh it, you have two external tables. And let's now join these two tables. What means joining these two tables? It means that we are joining HDFS data with each other, right?
The result is shown, right? This is the beauty. You're just running a simple select statement, one statement, and combine all your data in your Hadoop cluster. And now think about, and I will show you that, this is a simple example, I know. Now think about BI tools who are using SQL underneath. Right? This is simplicity. Simplicity and performance via the HDFS readers, fully parallelized. So in the last section, I would like to talk about two further scenarios. And actually, I'm running a little bit out of time, I think. Oh, no.
I still have time.
Sorry. Yeah. Which is, now we have select. I showed you different flavors of select, right? Combining relational with non-relational data. What happens actually after the select completes, the data gets completely removed. No data which comes from Hadoop into our appliance, into SQL Server PDW, will remain in PDW if you run a select. This is just a temporary thing. You're just returning results back to the client process, and all the data will be removed. Now, there are scenarios where we see customers asking, yeah, usually we get all these bunch of raw data, and we are interested in a subset of this data. This contributes to really our knowledge. And we want to run continuously the queries on top of this subset. But we don't want to get always the data into PDW. So what you can do is now, using the CTAS command, what we call the CTAS command, create table as select, to get the data now into PDW for persistent storage. So the only difference now is that in the source input of the select, you are referring again to external table, to continue my example with Clickstream, but as a destination, you are creating a regular PDW table. And I'm just naming it here with Clickstream underscore PDW to make the difference, to show you the difference in the syntax. But this is basically the same data which you're, and here you're selecting a portion, let's say you're selecting just some columns which are important for you, and you're storing it as a regular PDW table. Right? What happens underneath is the same process. Again, the HDFS readers, as part of the external move, are kicking in. The only difference is that we are not storing it into temporary tables, like in a select case, which get removed after the query completes, but we are now storing it into the destination table. The other way around is now also possible. So what we also hear from customers is they're saying, again, Hadoop is a great idea, also because we can use it as an active archive. We can store different kind of data which we are not interested in a way that we would like to query it on a regular basis, but we don't want to lose the data. That's actually also one of the great value propositions which Hadoop as a platform is now providing you, is that you don't need to delete the data. Right? And we see multiple instances that for historical purposes, you want to go back to data which was gathered 10 years ago, right? To do your analysis. So Hadoop as active archive. And how can you do that? Again, in a very simple way, with one command, which is the CETAS. I know I had long conversation with my marketing folks to say, how can we promote this command? CETAS, I know it sounds a little bit awkward, but CETAS, the difference is just the other way around, right? You're now inputting, or as input, you get a PDW table, right? The table which I just created as an example, clickstream underscore PDW, and you're creating an external table with a location. This location now indicates where the data from your relational store will land. Here, it's a folder output directory. So you are exporting the data out of the compute nodes into Hadoop in one single statement. And again, underneath, fully parallelized. And I apologize, this is a typo. It's not the readers now who are kicking in, but the writers, right? You are writing into Hadoop now. You're storing the data into Hadoop. And the beauty of this command is that while you are exporting out, while you're exporting the data out into Hadoop, you're creating actually an external table. That means, or the consequence is, that you can actually query this exported data immediately afterwards, right? Because again, the same processes take place. Create external table will create an external table object in the shell, which is the control node, SQL Server instance, which is a reference to that exported data, right? With one single statement. So quick information about what is the behavior if you do an export. So if the output folder, in my example, I said output directory, does not exist in Hadoop, we will create it for you. In case that the network is flaky and you may experience a network issue, we will discover that afterwards if the network comes up again, and we'll try what we call a one best effort cleaning. It's not in a database traditional way a rollback, right? We're doing it one time, trying to clean up the already created files. If that not succeeds, again a network issue happens like I experienced today, then we will basically not do an n times cleanup process. We have but a fast fail mechanism in place where we always check before we are writing into Hadoop whether we have actually permissions. This is something the Hadoop users has to enable for PDW or for this is like a file system, right? In a file system, people are laughing, people are walking. That's really funny. So it's like a file system, right? You need to have read and write operations, permissions, and that's what we require. And we are creating actually the files in Hadoop with a very unique naming so that you can actually track back which of the CETAS queries actually was responsible for creating these files, right? By providing the query ID and then some year, month, day, minutes information, right? And now, something that I'm really proud of, which is we took it even a step further, which is now what we call the round trip via CETAS. So think about the export one step further. You are getting data from multiple Hadoop distributions. Let's say you have two Hortonworks distributions, or you have two Cloudera distributions. You have different data in different clusters. Now think about you're getting this data in via the import path. You're combining it with your relational data, and then you're exporting it out immediately to whatever this destination you prefer, whatever Hadoop distribution you want. So you are getting the data in, so not like in the export file where you have already the data in PDW and then you're exporting it out, but rather you are on the fly getting the data into PDW, do the combining of relational data, and immediately exporting it out. So you're not storing anything on PDW side, but you're storing it then the results in PDW, again, immediately queryable via external table or consumable by your Hadoop processes. And that's, again, one single statement, nothing more than that. So in a select case, you are now referring to external tables. That's how you get actually the data in. Right? You're combining a user underscore PDW, a PDW table, and then the results are stored in an external table where you refer to whatever location you want. Now imagine you're not only referring to one click stream external table, but you have another data set which resides in another Hadoop distribution. You can combine it, the total freedom, where to store the data, how to combine the data, and that's, I think, the beauty of this example or this scenario.
So I have created here bands and flyers. And just to continue this example, here you see actually how to create a PDW table. That's what I mentioned with distribution is equal hash, and then you provide a distribution column, which is here the number as an example. And in the select portion here, you are referring to the external table bands, right? This is the external table which I have created before. Let's execute that. It is created. Now let's refresh the on the left side. And what you see here, and I mark it here, is basically the relational table which got created, right? With the data in PDW. That's basically the PDW table that which we created with the content from the Hadoop site, right? An external table, we don't have any content in PDW. Again, I can't stress it enough, right? But now, where you do a CTAS, where you referencing to the external table, you get all the data and you store it in PDW as a PDW table. And that's what this DB, this bands underscore PDW means. And here you see the one single statement. Exporting out. This is the CETAS, which I mentioned, right? Yeah.
Also here, you see, I'm actually now selecting from the table which I just created, a PDW table with the PDW data now, and exporting out, and I call it band second, and this file exists in Hadoop, or this data gets exported into Hadoop in the folder output directory. And by exporting out, we create now band second, right? Now band second should be shown as an external table. Let's refresh the left side. I was already scared. And here we go. Here you have the external table. You can immediately query this data, which is actually outside of the appliance. Beautiful. I love it. I mean, this is the simple approach, right? This is the simple approach. You don't need to understand MapReduce. You don't need to understand HDFS. You can use and you can move between these two worlds, combine your data in one single statement. You can get multiple data sources in, can combine the data, export it out, no scripts, no ETL. Right? And then under the cover, we have all this things which I explained, right? HDFS readers and writers and all this stuff. So there's some complexity there, but it is not shown for the user. So the really last portion is about, and it comes back to the question of this gentleman at the back, is what's the more general question, how do we do the update and upgrade? So let me start with how do we actually enable it before I come to update. So what we require is, since I told you about the HDFS bridge, right? The HDFS bridge is this portion which is Java written. So you need, unfortunately, the Java runtime environment. And now you can argue and say, oh, the user has to download it. We have a setup action which is actually installing it for you. You just need to download it. But you could argue and say, hey, wait a moment. You are actually violating the appliance model, right? I was standing here and was saying, oh, we are pre-configuring, pre-packaging everything for you. This case is an exception. It's an exception because it's Oracle. So that's why, because of legal aspects, we are forced to ask our users to do so. But we're working tightly now with Oracle to remove that burden. But this is something I wanted to share with you so that you know at least this is required as a prerequisite. Now coming back to what is required software-wise. And we have introduced a new option for SP underscore configure. I don't know how many people have used here SQL Server, but if you have used SQL Server, you know about SP underscore configure. This is basically the command you can use to do system-wide changes, for example, whether it is your language or whatever else. And we have introduced actually here an option which is called Hadoop connectivity. And by running now with a certain number, 1, 2, 3, or 0, you can enable it, and actually by enabling and telling it, okay, which of the Hadoop distros it should pick, right? And now think about the future, when we do the upgrade, what would happen is that we would have a new number here, 4 or 5, which will refer to the new distribution, right? That's how it would work for the user, completely transparent, but he has or she has to execute that command. And once we are maybe retiring the 1.0 versions, then it will disappear and we will realign it. There was one question here. At the same time? Very good question. So the question was, can we have or can we be connected to this to multiple Hadoop clusters? The question is yes and no. Yes, because what we require is that you have to have the same type of Hadoop cluster. So you can have 2 Hoffenworks on Windows Server, or 3 or 4, or you can have 2 or 3 Hoffenworks on Linux, or 3 or 4 of Cloudera, and it will work. But we will not support in this first version a heterogeneous landscape where you have Cloudera and Hoffenworks and want to connect at the same time. The reason behind this is there are slightly different client jars which we are leveraging, and this will become really messy if we want to support this heterogeneous landscape. And I'm talking with the customers, we see that they decide usually for one distribution, one type of distribution. Doesn't mean that they are just picking one Hadoop cluster, but one type means that they say, okay, I have a dev test machine from Hortonworks, and I will have also a production cluster from Hortonworks. Because you don't want to deal with the slight differences at production time, right? And this setting will be supported. So you can connect to multiple Hadoop distributions as long as they are of the same type. And of the same type means they are all Hortonworks or they are all Cloudera, okay? Yeah, at the end you run reconfigure that is known from a SQL Server, SP configure, reconfigure. All right, let's, the last demo is, so I have created all these different external tables, and I was highlighting now multiple times that the BI integration is there. So let's see how it looks like in reality. So what you see here is a power pivot table. I don't know how many of you are experts in BI, but this is one of the most popular BI tools nowadays. The power pivots and power views of people are using to get to visualize the insights out of data. What you have to do is just to say from data source, you use SQL Server, which is basically PDW. I'm just typing in here the IP address and the port, and I say, okay, log in as SA. Test connection, it's successful. What you can choose now here is, you know that I created a HadoopDB, right? That's where I run all the scripts. So I choose the HadoopDB, and so next, I say, yeah, we'll look all the lists available, and here we go. What you see here is the external tables and the PDW tables, which I have created during the session. Bands and flyers are the external tables referring to data in Hadoop, and the PDW tables appear here as well. Right? It's a seamless experience. You can now choose. Let's say we are choosing only the Hadoop data. Right? So let's say only bands and flyers, and we want to get it into our PDW tables. Here we go. Let's close it so that you can see that it was actually successful. Right? Very, again, very simple, not much data, but This is how it works, right? This is data coming from Hadoop through Polybase. External tables show up. Now think about Power Pivot, Power View, Geoflow, Data Explorer. All this is possible. All right. Let me conclude, summarize, 10 minutes. I hope I could show you that that we actually wanted really a simple approach to combine relational and non-relational data with each other, to combine this new platform, Hadoop, with a relational store. We have introduced for this purpose the concept of external table. With an external table, we are able now to run single, simple SQL statements, or even more complex SQL statements against external tables. We will take care about the processing underneath. We have introduced a fully parallelized way of doing so by introducing the HDFS bridge, which is part of the data movement service. You can combine different flavor, relational with non-relational data. You can even combine only non-relational data with each other, as I have shown. We are gathering minimal basic statistic support for the data which is coming from HDFS. I showed you the import path for persistent storage. I showed you the export path. And finally, we support various distributions, not only one. We are open. And last but not least, as I showed you in the very last part of the demo, we are fully and seamlessly working against the entire Microsoft BI stack. You can use Polybase against our own software. And I think altogether, this is the approach which distinguishes us greatly from all the other competitors out there. And that's why Polybase, I think, is such a beautiful feature and project. I'm referring here to related content if you want to go back and want to see. There were some sessions on Monday. A colleague, a PM colleague, actually showed a little bit more fancy examples than I did here, because I was focusing more on the fundamentals to explain how it actually works. He showed Polybase with SQL Server 2012 analysis services in direct query mode. There's actually a Polybase website, which I encourage you to have a look. Also the PDW website I would like to show. And then there's a demo video actually with PowerView, another example how to use Polybase. And with that, I would like to say thank you very much. I think that's the slides which I have to show. I really encourage you to do the evaluation. It is very important for me to see how I did, and hopefully I could explain you how it works, and I hope you enjoyed the session. And with that, thank you very much. Open up for questions. Thank you. Any questions? Or I will stick around here for the next 1 or 2 minutes if you guys...